We haven't had a lot of chance to talk pro wrestling in the last few days on JerryPark.com with so much going on in the MMA and boxing worlds, but I really wanted to get back into one of my favorite worlds, the world of pro wrestling, with Brian Alvarez, the editor of Figure Four Weekly. You can catch him on F4W online. Listen to all his podcasts. You can download the newsletter over there. It's a great site, daily updates. Well, one of the top sites that I check out for wrestling each and every day. So I want to thank him very much. I know he must be very busy nowadays. Brian, thanks so much for joining us on JerryPark.com.
Thanks for having me.
So first off, I wanted to talk about Raw, and obviously the flagship of the World Wrestling Entertainment, and I gotta admit, I'm depressed lately. I mean, to me, this harkens back to 95, 96, where Raw was at its lowest point. Do you share my assessment with the writing team and just the storylines in general, having no drama, no intrigue at all whatsoever?
I don't know if I'd go as far as to say it's 94, 95 levels, but it is. I've been watching it of late, and it's not so much Raw. It's actually more SmackDown and ECW that I watch the shows every week, and I sit there and I think, this was not a bad show. I wasn't offended by it, but it's Friday night, and I would rather be elsewhere, and I really don't understand how anybody could watch this show. And part of the reason SmackDown's doing okay is because there's a lot of children watching it that don't want Friday nights anyway, but I think that ECW and SmackDown are the two shows that really, there doesn't seem to be much of a use for them. They're helping somewhat as far as you know, pushing people to buy pay-per-views and that sort of thing, but it's absolutely not compelling television. And Raw has been hit and miss over the past year. I think there's some stuff that they've done that's been really good. I think there's some stuff they're doing, particularly involving the Leprechaun, that is not good. But I think there are periods where it's been worse.
Now, if there were one thing that you could kind of put your finger, I mean, it's very easy to say the writing team and, you know, all those factors that we hear about so much, but why is it the brand extension? Is it the fact that they're kind of spreading this talent roster so thin right now?
Well, the brand extension, I've always been a proponent of it, because if done properly, a brand extension is actually a brilliant idea. The problem is they've never really done it correctly, and so, you know, in the end, it may be better to just bring the rosters together, but I don't think they need to do that right now, because I think that if you brought the rosters together, you'd still have the same basic guys at the very top, and if you had the same basic guys on top going from working one show a week to working three shows a week, you're going to burn everything out far faster than it's being burned out now. I think the biggest problem that WWE has is that they've got a set number of guys on top, and it's very hard for them to create new stars. Part of that is that they're actually paying for mistakes that they've made in years past. I mean, they've debuted a lot of guys, and some guys they've given the big push to, and they've gone all the way, and most of them debut, they don't get over immediately, and so they end up tagged as mid-card guys forever. And once you've done that over a period of years, you've got fans expecting that if a guy debuts and he doesn't all of a sudden just start beating everybody and winning every match, he's a mid-carder. And thus, you've got this gigantic mid-card that nobody can break out of. You've got this very, very small upper card consisting of guys that we've seen on TV for years and years and years and years, and it's hard to keep things fresh. And when you're seeing the same things over and over again, I mean, it's one thing with Shawn Michaels and Randy Orton, because at least you're going to get a good match, but we've seen Shawn Michaels and Randy Orton, and we've seen Undertaker and Batista, and we've seen pretty much everything we're going to get for the near future. I mean, Hunter and Orton for WrestleMania, how many times have we seen that feud? So it's, you know, it's an inability to create new stars, and it's a lack of effort put into creating and developing new wrestlers in developmental. The developmental system is a complete disaster.
Yeah, and you mentioned the developmental system. That was actually my next question. Obviously, the focus on Ohio Valley Wrestling, Derby City Wrestling, which you like to talk about a lot on your site, has kind of been pushed aside for multiple reasons. But every once in a while, they get these guys. I think of Cody Rhodes. I think of Harry Smith that have actually they have the package and are, in my view, able to kind of reach that higher level status that you were talking about. And then they, you know. Harry Smith, they just debut him as D.H. Smith, giving a little promo, and then there goes his career. No vignettes. That whole concept of building up a star seems to have gone away. What can you? Is there any sort of explanation for the fact that they would put out a guy like Cody Rhodes, Harry Smith, with no build up whatsoever?
Well, the thing with vignettes that they used to do was. Let's just take a Mr. Perfect vignette. They would do those vignettes over and over and over again. You get excited to see the guy. And the key was, once he debuted, they'd do something with him. And, you know, if they'd done vignettes for Cody Rhodes for 6 or 8 weeks, and he finally showed up on TV and they pushed him the exact same way that they pushed him when he debuted, it wouldn't have meant anything in the end. And with D.H. Smith, it's a horrible name. It was a horrible debut. Everything they did to get Harry Smith on TV was pretty much horrible. But at least on Raw this Monday, he was right there in the mix. He was teaming with Jeff Hardy, facing Mr. Kennedy and I believe Carlito. And they at least on day two of his Raw career pretty much said, right now he's an upper mid-carder. That's good. At least they've done something with him. And it'll all depend on what they decide to do and if they decide, okay, well, he's not getting over, we're gonna take him out of this mix. But if they keep him there consistently, there's a chance that they can do something with him down the road. A guy like Cody Rhodes, he really had something early, and doing a number of jobs to Bob Holly, I know what they were trying to do, and I think that on another show, certainly in another era, this would have worked perfectly. But on another show, maybe on SmackDown, maybe on ECW, this would have worked. Maybe with another guy, it would have worked. Maybe if it were a bigger star than Bob Holly. But the fact that it took place on Raw with Bob Holly, there was no way this thing was going to work. And it's hurt him. And now he's been plugged into that slot of a mid-card guy with Bob Holly facing the world's greatest tag team, who are two complete mid-carders. And it's going to be very tough for him to break out of that slot, because once they put you in that slot, you know, they, unless you've got a superhuman physique or something like that, they largely think that that's where you're going to be, that's your slot forever. And once you slot people forever in a certain position, it's tough for fans to accept them being pushed higher than that level.
I really thought, given the fact that he's Dusty Rhodes' son, that he would kind of gotten different treatment in terms of his push. But back to Harry Smith for a second. We all knew that there was supposed to be the New Generation Heart Foundation. That's when Teddy Hart was still a member of the WWE family. Now he's gone, and they debut Harry as D.H. Smith. Is the Heart Foundation idea completely scrapped at this point?
I don't know. And I don't think they know. And I think that the debut of Harry Smith actually answers that question, because when they had plans for November for the new Heart Foundation, and when Teddy got fired, they brought Harry to TV in the UK. And the original idea was he was going to debut on SmackDown. He was going to do the John Cena Kurt Angle deal where somebody would issue an open challenge, probably a pretty big name. He would come out, accept the challenge, beat him, and a star would be born, which is actually what happened with Santino, and they dropped the ball on that for the exact reason that I've been talking about earlier, which was he didn't get over in the first 2 weeks, so they slotted him in the mid-card, and really the only thing that saved him probably from being fired is because they turned him heel and he was so awesome on the mic. But with D.H. Smith, they had that idea for him, and, you know, a week later he's on Raw. So it was a total change of plans at the last minute, and I don't think that they've really given a lot of thought to my gut is that there's not going to be something done with them, just because I would have had Natty out there on week one, or I would have worked towards that. Now it just seems like he's a single star. This is what they're doing. And maybe down the road they'll bring her in or something of that nature, but it doesn't seem like they're going to do anything right now.
Now, I don't want to completely harp on all the negatives. There is some good things out there in WWE world. And you mentioned probably my favorite right now is Santino Marella. I think his character is unbelievable. His work inside the ring might be a little suspect, but on the mic, there probably is no one better. What are you liking right now in terms of WWE, SmackDown, ECW? I mean, I think of MVP and Matt Hardy, what they have going, although I find that to be getting a little stale at this point. But what are you enjoying right now?
I like the thing with Matt Hardy and MVP because they have seemed to have found some different way to extend it every single week. And actually, some of this stuff is legitimate. I mean, we were supposed to have a singles match at the pay-per-view, and Matt ended up getting hurt, so that actually played into the storyline. And I kind of like where they're going with that. I think that there is good wrestling. I mean, we've seen some great wrestling on TV. We had the CM Punk, Johnny Nitro title match, which I thought was great. A lot of good stuff with Orton and even Shawn Michaels since he's come back. I like watching it because it's amazing to me that this man can barely walk and he's so great at every other aspect of the in-ring that he still goes out there with, no legs and has great matches. It's amazing to me. So I love watching that. And I thought the pay-per-view, Cyber Sunday, the first half of the show was horrible. It was a horrible show. But the second half, we had a lot of good wrestling. Hunter Numaga, I thought, was very good. I thought the main event was great. Undertaker and Batista, those two together always have great matches. And the Shawn Michaels-Orton match until the finish I thought was great. So really, I mean, just for those three matches, it really in some ways was one of the better pay-per-views of the year. But then, of course, you still had the undercard stuff and I don't know how many people bought the show, but I mean there's good wrestling there and Santino's great, so I can't say I think there have been periods where there's been a lot less great stuff. And actually I think another thing also is the first 5 months of this year on Raw were so great. I asked Dave Meltzer and other people that have watched wrestling forever, and I said, "Can you ever remember a period where there was 5 months of quality wrestling to this level on television, just five straight months of it?" And nobody can really remember a period like that. And I think that when you had a period that great, and then all of a sudden Chris Benoit passes away, Shawn Michaels is hurt, Edge is hurt, all of these guys, it was just a disastrous period for the company. So I think we had it so great that now this seems worse than I think it actually is.
You mentioned Chris Benoit, and I'm obviously not going to harp on all the steroid talk and everything because I'm sure you've spoken enough about that, but today is actually a big day in the world of WWE because this is the day where they said on November 1st all drug suspension will be made public, every single one of them. I'm not sure about the marijuana one just yet, but it seems as though they're going to try to go through with this and put them all out to the public, which is a good idea if it works and if they actually do it. Do you believe that they are actually going to make public every single suspended wrestler?
I don't think they're doing anything for marijuana. And I don't think – it's actually a really tricky situation because if you go to rehab, it doesn't count as a strike. So I'm thinking that if somebody is sent to rehab, that won't be made public. That leaves – drug test failures based on stupidity, which I don't think you're going to see any high-level guys failing drug tests because I think that there are enough loopholes in the wellness policy that you can get around it. And the guys that were recently suspended were guys that had just been stupid and got stuff online at a pharmacy using their real names and credit cards, and this came out publicly, so they had to be suspended. So I think that when they first announced that, they were serious. But I think that now that it's clear, I think it's 100% that there's not going to be any congressional hearings this year because Congress is shutting down in about 3 weeks and nothing's happening before then. So I think that there's kind of the impression that things are over and they can move on. I think that if a guy like, say, Carlito failed a test, I think they would probably announce that and suspend him for 30 days. I think if, let's say, Randy Orton passed out in a hotel room or something like that, I don't think they'd announce that. I think they would just send him to rehab and he would quietly disappear for 30 days. I don't know for sure, but I'm just looking at the history of how they've handled all of these drug situations with different guys. I don't think anyone's going to come up in a investigation as far as a pharmacy again, unless it's something that has already occurred months and months back. I don't think anybody's stupid enough now to get anything online. So, and like I said, because there's so many loopholes, you're not going to see the big guys getting busted for anything. So I would be surprised if we saw anything of note from this point forward. We might. I don't know. But I would actually be very surprised.
Everyone who was involved in the suspension is pretty much back. I think Chavo Guerrero is the last guy, and he's about to come back anytime soon. The two names, and one of them wasn't really involved with the drug suspension, but kind of left at the same time, which is Ric Flair, and the other Booker T, who is now gone from the WWE. I first wanted to ask you about Ric. Is he ever coming back to World Wrestling Entertainment, or are his days done there?
I would be stunned if he didn't come back. I mean, when the word first broke that he was fired, which actually was inaccurate, it was, I mean, I knew, okay, yeah, he's unhappy. Ric Flair's been unhappy a million times. It's Ric Flair. He's going to come back at some point. He's getting his business. He's getting his business going, and he's had some outside of the ring deals. So he's doing stuff now. He's doing some work for WWE.com. I think they're slowly mending the fences. The whole thing really is based around his retirement and if they're going to do anything and if they're going to do a last run till WrestleMania. They have an idea of what they want to do, a retirement storyline, but there are issues with the storyline as far as how you would do it. It basically involves a winning streak, and they don't want Ric Flair beating top guys, and if you can't have Ric Flair beat top guys, then it ain't much of a winning streak and it's not going to mean anything. So there are issues on how to do it, but it's not something that needs to be started probably until January. So my feeling would be that things will continue to mend, and come January, they'll figure something out for Ric Flair, and he'll be back.
With that winning streak that you spoke of, I've heard you and Dave talk about it a lot. Would he actually challenge for a title at WrestleMania, or would they just have him in a high-profile match, probably lose, and then sail off into the sunset?
I think the idea would be a title match, but that's also hard because you've got an idea for title matches for WrestleMania already, which Ric Flair's not in. So it could, and that's the other issue. I mean, if he's challenging for, say, the Intercontinental title, what does that mean? Or the tag titles? It doesn't mean anything. So that's another one of the issues there. I think, you know, I believe the idea for WrestleMania, obviously it's Hunter Norton for the Raw title, and then likely, you know, maybe a Undertaker versus Edge, or Edge versus Batista, some combination of those three guys. But I think that's the idea they have now. So you're also looking at they're going to be slowly building these storylines till January, and then when January comes, you're just going to throw out what you've got and put Ric Flair in there. I don't think that's going to happen. So I don't know. Maybe a Ric Flair Shawn Michaels match or something of that nature would be the final thing. I'm not sure, but making a title match is going to be hard.
All right, and the other name that I was thinking about was Booker T. I mean, an unbelievable run the last year as King Booker with his wife, Charmel, and then all of a sudden the suspensions, and he decides to leave and not re-sign a contract with World Wrestling Entertainment. Obviously, fans out there are looking at Genesis this Sunday. We heard that he was backstage at
the
TNA.
Is that this Sunday?
Yeah. Am I not? Is it this Sunday?
No, it's
next
after.
Sunday. Yes,
Sunday
you're right. Yes, November 10th. My apologies.
God.
They're all getting confused in my mind, all the pay-per-views. But next Sunday, with the main event, obviously Sting doesn't have a partner. Is Booker T going to be his partner?
Yeah, unless they change something. He's been the plan since day one. So.
And the Scott Hall appearance on Impact, which would air next week, is he now going to be – I mean, to me, Scott Hall is the worst – I know he's had this sort of career revival in Puerto Rico, and he seems to be trying to get back into shape. But, I mean, now with Nash trying to get back into the main event picture, Scott Hall back, is this just doomed for failure?
Well, you know, the whole story of TNA is everything is doomed to failure. But I expect them to team up. I don't know who they're going to face. maybe the Steiners or the Team 3 or something like that. But I would expect something to happen. Probably starting at the pay-per-view, they'll set it up and then set something up for the December pay-per-view. But I don't know. Nash very mobile, and he's no Shawn Michaels. No offense to the guy, but you know, when Hall's, I guess Hall's always pretty much carried the team, but you're asking a guy in his mid to late 40s to be carrying the team now, so it's gonna be tough. But I mean, they are still stars, so I don't know. Maybe as a short term run, they'll mean something for business.
I know you've been a really harsh critic of TNA, and I mean, all your points are valid. It boggles the mind sometimes seeing the stuff that they do with Kurt Angle and his wife, and then somehow Kevin Nash gets involved in the things that they do with the X Division. Again, I don't like to harp on the negatives. I don't want to blame the writing team, but it just seems as though now when they have the 2 hours, nothing has absolutely changed. It's pretty much the same show, and they keep bringing in these mid-card WWE guys. Dixie Carter seems to have some sort of infatuation with those Tess, Rikishi types. What's going on with TNA? I know it's a very open-ended question, but I mean, I've actually
talked for hours about this one.
As full disclosure, have done some work with TNA, and I don't like to, you know, they're great people over there, but it's just, it makes me want to punch myself sometimes watching that show. Help me out here. What is going on, and is there any light at the end of the tunnel? Is there some sort of big picture here that we're missing that by January TNA is going to get back on track? Because obviously they have a chance. I mean, WWE's ratings are down. They have this chance right now, and they seem to be dropping the ball.
Well, where to start? I'm very hard on TNA, and most of that is because if this were a situation where I knew that there was not even any hope, I don't think I'd even care. But I watched the last pay-per-view, and I thought that pay-per-view was so great, and it made me so angry to see such a great pay-per-view sandwiched between such wretched, wretched television. And I look at the ratings, and it, which obviously they do. I mean, that's their big concern is the ratings. And, you know, they're down to a 0.95 for a two-hour show. They're down to 1.3 million viewers. They were doing, you know, 200,000 more viewers in an hour. Something's wrong here. And, you know, I've heard from other people that everyone there is really nice. Okay, that's great. But I think that's part of the problem, where this business is not about being nice. I mean, I think that if you've got a wrestling company and you don't have some disgruntled employees, you've got a problem. And the problem with them is they're trying to run a company with no disgruntled employees, and they still have disgruntled employees because of how they're running the company. That's also bad. It's very frustrating to watch. I think that the writing crew needs to be axed. I think everybody is well aware of that by now. I don't really care who is given the opportunity, but it's very clear to me that what they're doing is not working, and it has not been working for a long, long time. Therefore, try something different. That seems to me to be something logical, but apparently they're just going to keep doing. I mean, it's like the old saying: if you keep doing the same thing, why would you expect change? And I don't know why they would expect change. It's like they live in this bubble, and it's kind of funny because people always mention the wrestling bubble, and people claim that I'm in the wrestling bubble, and I always think, you want to talk about a wrestling bubble, look at the people in TNA. Apparently they think that they're running a successful company, and that they're a strong number two, and they go to the buildings, and these fans are going nuts, and I think they're completely snowed by what the reality is of this situation, and the reality is that things are bad. I mean, the only – they've got a backer who could pull out at any time. And I realize they've got a three-year deal on Spike, but if your backer pulls out, what have you got? How do you keep running for three more years? I don't have an answer to that question. So it's just bad. There's so much potential there, and it's I don't even know. There's so much potential, and it's such wasted potential.
I think that's the thing that bothers people the most, is that they have such a great roster, and I mean, night after night, and they come up with these shows, the pay-per-views, that clearly show that they have what it takes to put on great matches, but then all the other crap just makes you forget about it all in a second.
I think that's why I get so angry, is because
right.
I watch Genesis, and I thought, okay, if you had something resembling a two-hour version of this every Thursday, I would be the biggest Impact fan in the world. It would be my favorite show of the week. Instead, you put on this product every Thursday that I have to watch, and I know what you can do, and instead I get the exact opposite. I get this horrible, horrible show every Thursday, and it angers me. It offends me that I have to watch something so bad when I could, obviously, because I've seen it, watch something so good.
I love the fact that I've gotten you to scream right now at the top of your lungs. Like, I've actually really pissed you off.
I don't know what it is, but I get so angry about TNA. And I talk to Dave, and he's like, well, you know, I realize I ain't getting any better, so I just deal with it. And I think, no, there's hope here. And so I get frustrated that, I don't know.
Would you ever be interested? You said the writing team needs to be axed. Have you ever been approached, or would you be interested in pursuing that and trying to write for one of the promotions, specifically TNA?
I have been approached, and I turned it down. And
was it
this
for,
was
for TNA or WWE?
Not for TNA. This was WWE, and it was actually in the mid to late 90s when the product was actually great. So the fact that I turned it down then, I mean, there's no chance of me taking it today.
Why did you turn it down? Was it just because you had your business going and you didn't seem that you could do – obviously, you wouldn't be able to do both, but what were the reasons behind it?
Well, I knew the life of a writer in WWE and really anywhere in wrestling. And it's a very – it's not so much that it's a thankless job because, you know, if – I've written newsletters that I thought were very great, and nobody said a thing about. So in many ways, sometimes my job is thankless. But to me, the whole thing was, okay, I've got this newsletter going, which is actually starting to do very well, and if you know, there's no reason that this newsletter should die anytime soon because WWE is not going to die, and even today, I mean, there's no chance of WWE dying. TNA, if Panda doesn't pull out, at least 3 years. MMA seems to be on the rise, so, I mean, there's a chance for me to do this and make a living for many, 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 many years. Whereas going to WWE and being a writer, or going to TNA and being a writer, you're looking at, okay, I'm going to get probably a very short period of time here. I don't know, I'm sure I'll make some decent money, but if you break down the amount of money I would make to the hours worked, because it's a 24-hour job. If Vince calls you at 4 a.m., you got to be ready to take the call. To me, it was like, this is not worth it in any way. So that's why I turned it down then, and more so than ever now, I would turn it down.
Now, before I let you go, I wanted to ask you a question. You mentioned MMA, and our conversation here is kind of in a state of pro wrestling, which we've been doing the last week with boxing and MMA. A lot of people say that boxing's biggest enemy is MMA, and they're going to be taking away all their fans, and soon boxing is going to die. We all know that's not going to be true. They've produced some great fights the last few weeks, but I really feel that MMA's biggest opponent and the ones that should be really fearful of MMA is pro wrestling. Do you at all ever see the day where all pro wrestling fans just gravitate towards MMA? Because once the drama builds, which it keeps building, the fights are so closely related. I mean, MMA has risen from the world of pro wrestling many years ago. Do you see that being a potential problem down the road for these companies like TNA and WWE, which seem to be coasting and, you know, happy with their ratings and their crappy storylines? One day reality will strike them?
I don't think so. I think that UFC is still very hot right now, but we've passed the peak. And I'm not saying there's not going to be another peak. I mean, we could have another peak in 2008, but we're not at the level that we were, you know, 6 months and a year ago. And during that period when UFC was at its peak, I could even go back to like the Jackson Liddell where you got all the, I mean, tons and tons of mainstream coverage for that fight. That didn't hurt wrestling. Now, I shouldn't say that. It didn't hurt wrestling in a devastating fashion. MMA has hurt pro wrestling, and it's anybody who says it has not is wrong, basically. It has taken away some of the young viewers, but more importantly, the fact that you're adding a UFC pay-per-view every month, you've gone from, you know, a couple of wrestling pay-per-views to now you've got at least three choices. You've got a UFC pay-per-view, a WWE pay-per-view, and a TNA pay-per-view. And TNA is always going to suffer because of that. Because there are people that, even if you're a wrestling fan, if you're a wrestling fan and a UFC fan, unless you're going to buy three pay-per-views, which I don't think many people are going to do, you're going to get the WWE show and you're going to get the UFC show. That's just how it is. So this has hurt TNA. UFC is real, but it's not, wrestling fans, it's not about real fake in the U.S. It's about the entertainment aspect of it and being able to get into it. I think U.S. wrestling fans watch wrestling in the same way that they would watch a movie. They don't care if it's real. They just want to be entertained and be able to get into it. And that's why wrestling fans get frustrated, is because sometimes with TNA, I mean, the logic holes are such that you can't get into it. It's completely absurd. A guy coming out from under the ring to pull somebody under, and then the show goes off the air, and you're like, well, what happened when they took the ring down? It's completely ridiculous. So with UFC, there are always going to be things in pro wrestling that are better than things in UFC. And part of the problem we've seen this year is it's harder to have a breakthrough star in MMA because of all the upsets. Everybody's going to lose, basically. And when everybody's able to lose, it's really hard to create that big breakthrough superstar character. I mean, all of Chuck Liddell's losses, he's had two losses in a row now, and he's not going to be the same draw after those two losses. Whereas in pro wrestling, if done correctly, you can keep a guy unbeaten forever. And you can go down to Mexico to just look at the giant boom that they had in CMLL, and that all came to an end when they started beating Mystico every week. He'd been undefeated for like 2 years, and he hadn't dropped a fall in like 2 years, and they beat him. They just started beating him, and business has tumbled as a result. And because pro wrestling is predetermined, and because you can protect guys, and because you can do multiple takes on interviews and that sort of thing, there will always be things about pro wrestling that are better than MMA. And because of that, I think that there are always going to be fans that are just going to love their pro wrestling. I mean, they may still love UFC, and they may be bigger UFC fans. I mean, there are many times when a pay-per-view occurs, and I think, you know, I'm a way bigger UFC fan than I'm a pro wrestling fan. But I still love my pro wrestling. And unless it's horrible, I'm always going to watch it. So I don't see it killing the business here in this country.
All right, Brian. Well, thank you so much for joining us. I didn't want to harp so much on the negatives, but I felt like we needed to get it out of the way. So the next time you come on JerryPark.com, we can talk more specifics and about more storylines and whatnot. I really want to thank you. You can catch Brian, F4WOnline.com. Also now the new host of the Wrestling Observer Live on Sirius Satellite Radio and Sports Byline Radio Network. Catch all his podcasts, his newsletter, everything on that website. It's a great site, and I really appreciate you taking the time today.
All right, thanks very much for having me.